Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer, how laughter bellows louder among friends, and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover and experience the best of nature, with over 450,000 trails worldwide and navigation right at your fingertips. Find your outside with All Trails. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Well, here we are. Here we are, Met fans. After we thought we got out of it, after we thought this team was turning their season around, yippity-doo-dah, seven-game winning streak, back in first place, everything is right with the world, the New York Mets officially suck again. They complete what was an absolutely disastrous homestand. There is no other way to define it, going 1-5. Against the Giants and the Guardians. They get swept by Cleveland, and to top it all off, the cherry on top, while they didn't get no hit, they allowed Gavin Williams to get within 2 outs of pitching a freaking no-hitter on a Wednesday afternoon at Citi Field. Welcome in to what is probably going to mostly be a depressing and angry edition of Rico Bronya, episode number 526. This is a rare one where you're doing this live soon after the afternoon game on a Wednesday. Thank you to the New York Yankees. They are playing an afternoon game in Texas, so it basically eliminated our afternoon show, which meant, thank you, New York Yankees, I had the opportunity to go to a rare Wednesday afternoon game, and I had the chance to take my four-year-old son, and I had a chance to take my beautiful wife. And as this train wreck was occurring, as this limp-dick offense continued to march its way through this foggy, disgusting Wednesday afternoon, I had the honor of explaining to my wife and four-year-old what a no-hitter is. And I did find it kind of ironic, if you will, if that's the right word, that my four-year-old, who's been to, I've taken him to a bunch of games, but it's still on the low end. He's only four. Let's say he's been to 20 games, which is a good number for a four-year-old. He was on the precipice of seeing something live that took my dad 60 plus years to see live. And that was a no-hitter. And I'm so proud of little Spence, because as I described what a no-hitter was in the ninth inning and how it's historic and his older brother hasn't seen one and his grandfather finally saw one in 2016 and his dad, it took forever to see. I asked him, I said, look, we're going to lose this game either way. Do you want to see a no-hitter, or do you want to see the Mets get a hit? And he proudly said, I want to see them get a hit. Well, thank you, Spence, because I got to tell you, most people in that building, I almost got the sense they wanted to see the no-hitter. I think there's a lot of Met fans out there right now. If you went to this game, good crowd, 40,000. If you consume the game on radio or on TV, that were probably so disgusted by this offense. And we'll get into Tuesday's game as well, a little bit of Monday, though we did a drive home podcast the other day. I think there were enough people so disgusted by this offense that they actually wanted to see the Mets get no hit. That would have been the perfect rock bottom to really kind of show where this season is right now, what this offense has been right now. What would be better than being no hit by Gavin Williams on a Wednesday afternoon? But good news, Juan Solo came through with a clutch home run to break up the no-hitter. And before anybody gives me credit for calling him Juan Solo, we have a ton of angry emails, which we will get to throughout the course of this, Rico. But David from High Bridge, New Jersey, was the brainchild behind Juan Solo, unless someone else had it and David stole it from them. But David writes, "Hey, Evan, from this moment on, I will call Juan Soto Juan Solo because that's all he ever hits." And that is backed up by Rico Bronya data. We've gone through the different home runs Juan Solo has hit this season. And I think we did it on the last Rico or two Ricos ago. But I'll give you some of the numbers in case you're curious, because I do have them written down. Juan Solo has now hit, let me tally it up, 26 home runs. Okay, not bad. 20 of the 26 are solo home runs, and the other six are two-run home runs. 0 3-run home runs, 0 grand slams. Gary Cohen had that stat a few days ago. He did not credit the Rico Bronya, but I'm pretty sure he got it from the Rico Bronya, or at least someone gave it to him from the Rico Bronya, because who else is doing this crap? So Juan Solo comes through to break up the no-hitter. I admit, I did not want to see them get no hit. First of all, I've seen two no-hitters in my life, Johan Santana and Chris Heston. So it's not like I need to see another one. All right, I've seen two. I'm good. The only other no-hitter I want to see is the Mets pitch one. And while I understand that there are Mets fans who would have enjoyed the rock-bottom nature of being no-hit by Cleveland, what do you really think that's going to do? You know what I mean? Like, getting swept by the Guardians, losing 7 of their last 8 games, isn't that enough? Dropping 2.5 games out of first place, isn't that enough? Isn't getting no hit for 11 or 12 innings, whatever it ended up being, through Tuesday's game and Wednesday's game, isn't that enough embarrassment? Like, you really think that the Guardians celebrating a Gavin Williams no-hitter is going to change anything? Like, that's going to cause David Stearns to fire Eric Chavez? And by the way, my opinion on firing Eric Chavez, why not? I'm not a big proponent of firing the coaches and thinking it's going to spark a team. But I also, especially this time of year, when you get to August and the trends are the trends, I start to say, well, you got two choices. Choice number one is do nothing. Choice number two is try something. So if David Stearns announces on the Mets off day, hey, we're departing, or we are parting ways with Eric Chavez or Jeremy Barnes, I can't be against that. Now, I'm not going to tell you it's going to make a world of difference. I don't know if it will. But it is now almost the middle of August. This offense is mediocre. I sat here in April and May and June, and I defended them, and I said they'll be fine. They're a better offense. The offense is going to have to carry them. I said a lot of things. Well, guess what? It's August 6th, August 7th. They're not good. They're not good. And we can hope for Juan Solo to turn it around. Sure. We can hope for Brandon Nimmo to not strike out 5 times in a game. We can hope for that stuff. And maybe it will turn. But this team has played 115 games, and they're a bad offense. Let's go back to Tuesday night. Tuesday night, in a lot of ways, game 2 of this series, in a lot of ways, was so perfect to describe the state of the New York Mets and really where they are. Because you had some good that got outweighed by the bad. Like, here's good number one. The offense came out, had some good at-bats against Logan Allen, drew a couple of walks. You saw the Mets specialty stealing bases, and you saw them score a run without getting a hit, which I love. That turns me on as a baseball fan. You don't even get a hit, you score a run. I love it. 2 walks, a wild pitch, a balk, a stolen base, a sack fly. I mean, that's baseball porn right there. And the Mets score a run and they take an early lead. And then the second inning was so indicative of what this team is. They get a leadoff double by Mark Vientos. I'm not going to kill Jeff McNeil for bunting, because I think he was bunting for a hit. And even though you've got 8 and 9 coming up, all right, fine. He's bunting for a base hit. Jeff McNeil's done it before. I'm not in love with it necessarily, but I'm not going to kill him for it. And it turns into a sacrifice. And then the bottom of the order, prophetic to what David Stern said a few weeks ago, gets a great at-bat from Alvarez where he draws a walk. And then a freaking clutch hit from Tyrone Taylor. I almost fell out of my chair. Tyrone Taylor? Hasn't had it since May. Comes through with an RBI hit. And so they're up in this game 2-0. They got two on for the top of the order. And what a sick puppy I am. I felt good. I was like, all right, this is the way you respond. Clay Holmes had retired the first six guys with four strikeouts. He looked sharp. It's 2-0 Mets. They got two on and one out. The top of the order is coming up. Let's go. In fact, I admit there was a thought that popped into my head. And maybe it's because I was at Staples earlier in the day and they got that button that says that was easy, which my son kept hitting over and over again. That was easy. That was easy. That was easy. I'm actually thinking this is going to be easy. We're going to have a nice, comfortable victory. This is going to be fun. Clay Holmes is dealing. The offense is going to beat up Logan Allen. And I know. Francisco Lindor hit the ball hard. What can you do? It's bad luck. And it is bad luck. I get that. But Francisco Lindor smokes a ball 105 miles per hour, turns into a really nicely turned 4-6-3 double play from Rocio to Arias to Kefas. By the way, those are all real people. And if you watch this series, you know them all well, especially Gabriel Arias, who's still crushing the Mets. When Lindor bounces into that double play, my that was easy feeling turned, because I know the New York Mets, as do you. If you downloaded the Rico Bronya and you're listening on a Thursday morning or a Wednesday night, or you're consuming this live on YouTube, you're a sick, sick freak. You're a sick Met fan. So you know the Mets. You don't casually know the Mets. You know the Mets. And for everyone listening who knows the Mets, you knew this is going to be a disaster now. They had their moment. They had a great opportunity. And yes, it was bad luck. Am I mad at Francisco Lindor for bouncing into a double play? How can you be? It was bad luck. I'm more mad at what happened next. That's what I'm mad about. Because I want you to think about the entirety of the Met offense from the third inning Tuesday to the brooms officially coming out Wednesday afternoon. From that point on, the New York Mets, and let's do all the math. It's 12 innings, I think I'm going to add. No, it's more than that, because it's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So it's 7 plus 9. Honey, what's 7 plus 9? 16? 16. Okay. So for the next 16 innings against Logan Allen, Matt Festa, who we saw sucked as a Met not too long ago, Colby Allard, Jacob Junis, Cade Smith, who should have been tired from his performance the night before, and then obviously what we saw Wednesday with Gavin Williams, the Mets over the next 16 innings would get three goddamn hits and one meaningless run from Juan Soto. So I didn't necessarily think that was going to occur when Lindor bounced into the bad luck double play, but you just knew, okay, this isn't going to be easy. And that's what I'm mad about. So for anybody, including the manager, who says, well, look, I mean, he hit the ball hard. What can you do? Fine. It was bad luck. But how do you explain the rest of the game? How do you explain from that moment on the Met offense getting two freaking hits? How do you explain it? I can't. And quite frankly, I don't even want to. Like, you could tell me about approaches and adjustments and swing decisions. This is a bottom line business. This is a results business. It's like if I'm eating a hot dog. I love a hot dog. I don't care how it was made, because I don't want to know how it was made. So you could tell me about all the reasons why the Met offense sucks. None of us care. We just know they suck. We just know they have underperformed all season long. And from the third inning of Tuesday night's game on, that was an embarrassment. An embarrassment. I mean, Logan Allen is okay. Matt Festa, Colby Allard, Jacob Junis, Cade Smith. Now, Cade Smith is very good. But you know what I mean? Embarrassing. And that's the issue with Tuesday. The issue with Tuesday was not the bad luck of Lindor's double play or even not taking advantage of that opportunity. Because look, Tyrone Taylor had a freaking RBI single. Throw a party. It was everything that happened after that. And you can't even complain. I can't about the missed opportunities with runners in scoring position because you know how many at-bats they had with runners in scoring position from the third inning on? One. One at-bat. And Brandon Nimmo struck out, which he did about 500 times in this series. So Tuesday night's offense was pathetic. Now let me get to Clay Holmes. Clay Holmes did his job. For everyone who hates Clay Holmes, for everybody who thinks he's a disaster and wants to stick him back in the bullpen, which I've gone back and forth on, really based on the roster and the situation they're in, Clay Holmes did his freaking job on Tuesday. And that's kind of a common statement. Like the starting pitching takes a beating sometimes, but there are a lot of nights in which the starting pitching ultimately does their job. And it's the offense that does nothing. Clay Holmes had a five-inning performance. He had one bad inning. And I give him a little bit of credit that that one bad inning didn't become a bigger disaster. And some of that bad inning was bad luck. Look, giving up a base hit to Stephen Kwan ahead of the count 0-2, pitch decision. I put that on Clay. Walking Daniel Schneeman right ahead of Jose Ramirez, I put a lot on Clay. You can't do that. But to his credit, he got Ramirez to ground out. He gave up a blue pit to Kyle Manzardo. It wasn't it very hard. And then he gave up a base hit to Gab Arias, who just killed the Mets all series long. And then he got a big out against Angel Martinez and got through the inning. And then Clay Holmes, and this was going to be the key to his performance. The whole key was, all right, three perfect innings, a rocky fourth, second time around the batting order. What are you going to do in the fifth? That fifth inning is the big one. And it was 8-9-1 of the batting order, second time around. Obviously, Kwan would be third time around, and he got him out 1-2-3. And I do say this a lot. So if you are playing the Rico Bronya bingo game, you will hear something I say a lot, which is let's not get crazy about pitch count both ways. Clay Holmes only threw 75 pitches. I get it. It's not a lot. Everyone's got to be honest with themselves. Did anybody think against 2, 3, and 4 of the batting order, the same crew that got to Clay Holmes and put the rally together in the fourth inning, do you really think Clay Holmes was getting through the sixth inning? And if the answer is yes, I politely ask you to look back at a lot of Clay Holmes's other starts this season and how many times Clay Holmes had a good performance going, like a solid performance going, and then putting guys on base in the sixth inning did him in. How many times have we said that this season? Where he put guys on base, which is on him, but then the inherited runners scored, which turned 5 1/3 innings, 2 runs, and a 5 1/3 innings, 4 runs. We've said that a lot this year. So if you've watched this team all year long and you're being fair, those are the two kind of things you need, the two check marks, fairness and consuming this team all year. You wanted Clay Holmes out for the sixth inning? Why? And if your answer is he only threw 75 pitches, that's the wrong answer. Because like I said, we get nuts about, oh, it's 95, push him more, he looks great. Well, then you got to be fair about this. Even with a low pitch count, you know Clay Holmes. You know what he is. And the other thing is, you have yourself a bullpen. And this bullpen is good. And this bullpen was good in this series. It was. You want to get on Tyler Rogers? Let's go through what happened with Tyler Rogers. Because Soto comes in, and after he hits Schneeman, which was not ideal, with Ramirez and Manzardo and Naylor coming up, he got the next three guys out. Tyler Rogers got the first two guys out in the seventh inning and then gave up two cheap base hits. Like, I'd love to sit here and say, can you believe it? 8-9 of the batting order, Tyler Rogers choked. The balls were not hit hard. We talk about luck, bad luck, good luck. It was crazy that Kafis and Rocchio's hits got in. And Rocchio's one bothered me even more. He was ahead 1-2. And remember, like one pitch earlier, Rocchio just missed a home run. Now, that would have been a disaster. That would have been worthy of killing Tyler Rogers for. Rocchio's hit one home run all year. And he gives up the little dinker, the little ground ball that finds a hole. And with Kwan coming up, it's dangerous. The dangerous thing about guys like Stephen Kwan and Luis Arraez is that even if their OPSs aren't high, when you put the bat on the ball, you give yourself just a greater chance that something's going to find the hole. And obviously, Kwan banged one up the middle for a base hit. And thankfully, Tyler Rogers didn't completely implode because he hit Schneeman too, ahead of Jose Ramirez, and he fell behind 3-0, and luckily got him to ground out. So it's 3-2 instead of what I thought it was going to be, which was 5-2. So is it Tyler Rogers' best work? No. But, I mean, I can't say he crapped the bed. I can't say he stinks. I still have confidence in Tyler Rogers. And here's my thought when that inning ends. You got 9 outs if you're the New York Mets. Got 9 outs. Can you score a freaking run? That's it. Score a run. And not only do you have 9 outs, you got 9 outs in which Soto, Alonso, Lindor, Nimmo, they're all going to get an at-bat. And if you could put a guy or two on base, not asking much, you'll get them up again. So Tyler Rogers' inning I just described, that seventh inning, let's face it, it was the only issue this bullpen had this entire series. Go back to the drive home pod we did, episode 525. The Met bullpen didn't give up anything other than Ryan Helsley. And Ryan Helsley, in my opinion, did nothing wrong. All he did was get people out. Ryan Helsley intentionally walked somebody in a spot in which he needed to intentionally walk that person. More on that in a little bit. A guy laid down a bunt and Brett Beatty made a terrible throw. He got a ground out, a fly out, and a pop up. That's the other inning that saw a reliever give up a run. So do the math on this. The Mets got 4 1/3, basically scoreless innings out of their bullpen on Monday. On Tuesday, they get 4 innings, 1 run out of their bullpen. And that, of course, the run Rogers gave up. And then they tacked on 3 scoreless in the Wednesday game. So let's all do the math together. What is that? 11 1/3 innings. They gave up 3 runs. 2 of them are unearned, and the other one, yeah, it sucked.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer, how laughter bellows louder among friends, and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover and experience the best of nature. With over 450,000 trails worldwide and navigation right at your fingertips. Find your outside with All Trails. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Big moments or small moments, they all deserve great style. Our over 800 stylists are here to help you look and feel your best. Visit your local Maurice's to find fashion fit for you with a little help from us.
It was cheap. This Met bullpen has lived up to what we thought and think it can be. And so that goes back to Carlos Mendoza absolutely making the right decision taking Clay Holmes out. You want to squeeze another inning out of this guy when you got a fresh bullpen? And you also have a bullpen that you can push because you know you have Thursday off. And then you have the following Monday off. So you're in a very good spot time-wise to push the bullpen. Mendy didn't do anything wrong in that spot. What was wrong was this offense. That was what was wrong. Clay Holmes, not to blame. The Met bullpen, not to blame. In terms of individual managerial moves, I mean, what are we looking at? Using Ronnie Mauricio to pinch hit for Mark Vientos? I mean, Vientos had a double in the second inning. Pinch hitting for Jeff McNeil, not going to do that. Pinch hit for Alvarez, I guess you can consider that, down a run in the ninth inning with two outs and nobody on. So Tuesday's game is just 1,000% on this LD offense. I'm going to start calling him LD because there are kids in the audience, but we all know what it means. Limp dick. This is a limp dick offense, but that's the last time I'm going to say it. All right? That's your code now. LD for the kids. I mean, absolutely pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. And I look at Wednesday's game and I say, for the love of God, go out if you're this offense, which went down so meekly on Tuesday. Like I talked about, they're down a run. You got all these guys coming up and they got retired 1-2-3 in the sixth by Matt Festa, who we may remember. 1-2-3 in the seventh by Colby Allard. 1-2-3 in the eighth, that saw Soto strike out looking, what's up? And then in the ninth inning, also down by a run, Cade Smith, who came in a night earlier and had to get how many outs? Four outs? Weren't even sure he was going to be available. And he comes in and barely breaks a sweat. Which does tell me, it tells me that as painful as Monday was with the way they came back and lost anyway, and I made this comment, I think it was on Evan and Tiki, that Jet came to me with at that game. And he said to me, hey, wouldn't it have been easier if we just lost 5-0? Like, wouldn't it have been easier to not come back and lose dramatically? And I get it for our stomach. But after watching that meekness on Tuesday, no, I want to see him come back. And the irony of it is Pete Alonso, and I love you, Pete. I do. I love you, Pete. And I know there's no right thing to say after games. What do you want these guys to say? We suck. There's no good answer. But Pete gives us the, well, it's a good sign we came back. Would have been worse if we did nothing. Okay, what about Tuesday, Pete? You weren't down by 5 runs. You were down by 1 run. And in the sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth, you went down 1-2-3. 14 in a row. 14 in a row. They couldn't get a base runner. And it's everybody. Because this net negative award that I'm going to hand out in a few minutes, oh my God, there's a million candidates. Now let's get to Wednesday, because I was hoping that this offense against Gavin Williams, who's a solid pitcher, I don't want to put him down. He's had a solid year for Cleveland, but I was hoping that this offense would respond. And they had that one great opportunity in the second inning when Brandon Nimmo, who had a miserable first two games, gave you two quality at-bats to at least draw walks against the unhittable Gavin Williams. But they get a walk by Nimmo. He goes to second on a wild pitch. They got a runner on second, nobody out, down 1-0 after Peterson gave up that home run to David Fry, and tie the game. Do what you did the night before. What I said earlier can sometimes be baseball porn. Score a run without getting a hit. You don't have to get a hit. And what happens? Vientos grounds out the shortstop, can't advance the runner. McNeil gets ahead of the count, gets a pitch to hit, rolls one over to second base. And then Cedric Mullins has a good at-bat, draws a walk, and Luis Torrens flies out. And what's crazy is, and I wish I knew this at the time, that would be their final at-bat with runners in scoring position. That would be their last chance. Their last chance would be the second inning, having two guys on and nobody out. And the rest of this game was just Gavin Williams doing whatever the hell he wanted. And quite frankly, the Mets didn't exactly do damage to the baseball. There wasn't a lot of bad luck. I know Vientos got robbed in the seventh inning by C.J. Kafis, who made a nice diving catch. And Mark Vientos hit a couple of balls on the screws. But for the most part, it was a continuation from Tuesday night. How is that possible? How is an offense with this much talent, and they do have a lot of talent, how is it possible that this is happening, that they're getting mowed down again? And I'm tired of tipping my hat. I'm tired of saying, well, you know, Gavin Williams was nasty. How do you explain the night before? And then you got poor David Peterson, and it's got to be mental. He'll never admit it. These guys will never admit it. And look, I'm not taking David Peterson's start on Wednesday and sending it to Cooperstown. It was okay. It was a little bit below average, if you will. But once he goes down 1-0 by giving up the home run to Fry, which was a killer because he was ahead of the count, you don't think he's thinking to himself, I can't give up another run? When he then gives up a 2-run homer to Angel Martinez in the third inning, he's not thinking to himself, well, I'm effed. I mean, I'll try to give this team 6 innings like I always do. No one else can. I'll try. But it ain't going to make a difference with this offense. And that's why David Peterson's performance was, it was okay. And if you have a functioning offense, if you have one that should live up to what this team is, we're looking at 6 innings, 4 runs, and saying, all right, he kept him in the game. And quite frankly, Juan Soto contributed to that line not looking as good as it could have been. Because he gives up the home run to David Fry in the second inning, makes it 1-0. That sucks. He gives up the 2-run home run to Angel Martinez in the third inning. That really sucked because it's 3-0. It felt like 9. And David Peterson did a really good job after that. Pitched a 1-2-3-4th, worked through an Austin Hedges walk, which should be, you should get fined if you walk Austin Hedges as the 9th place hitter and his 130 batting average. But whatever. That was David Peterson's only one of 2 walks he had in this game. He gets through it, and he gets the first 2 outs of the 6th inning. So David Peterson is an out away from putting together the old-fashioned quality start, 6 innings, 3 runs. You know what, Davey? You kept this in the game. And he committed a cardinal sin, which is the 2-out walk to Carlos Santana. Can't happen. Cannot happen. And then you've got Gabriel Arias, who has kicked the Mets' ass all series long, hit one up the alley to right center field. And I'll call it like it is. Juan Soto was very lazy getting to that baseball. He was. And I, by the way, I accept that. Ricky Henderson was lazy getting the balls in the corner. So I know this comes with the territory, and it wouldn't have made a difference in this game. But I want to properly describe what happened. He lazily got to the ball in right field. He had trouble picking it up. And I don't know if Santana doesn't score if Soto gets over there with urgency. Maybe he doesn't. And the truth is, it doesn't matter. Mets are going to lose this game anyway. We don't necessarily know that at the time, even though you may think it. So we need to be honest with the fact that, look, this is the way he plays sometimes. It would piss me off more if it literally cost them a game, if it was the 8th inning of a tie game. But everything about that play was ugly. It just was. The way he got over there, the look, the lack of urgency in the look and the way he fielded it, not being able to pick it up cleanly. Like, it was just, it wasn't a good look. It wasn't. And it turned what could have been 6 innings, 3 runs into 6 innings, 4 runs. And yeah, it feels something really different about 6 innings, 3 runs and 6 innings, 4 runs. I don't know why. Maybe it's the whole quality start stat. Maybe that's what it is. But yeah, David Peterson did not end his start the most effectively. Did strike out Kafis right after that to at least get through the inning. But this isn't on David Peterson. This is on the offense. And the bullpen kept it close. Reed Garrett gave you scoreless innings. He's pitched very well recently. Justin Hagemann, which I guess it shows you I wasn't on Twitter before the game because I still thought Dom Hamill was on the team. Then I see Hagemann walking out there who looks just like Pete Hoffman. I don't know if we said that the last time Hagemann was here, but he looks like Hoff. Personal opinion. He looks like Pete Hoffman, but he also looks like Jason Bay. And I never thought that Pete Hoffman looked like Jason Bay, but I guess he does. So all of a sudden, Hagemann comes in and pitches a scoreless inning. Now let's get to this 9th inning, because I am convinced that, and you tell me if you were there, well, we'll check your emails in a second. I was convinced that most people in the building wanted to see the no-hitter. I felt that way. My wife is watching the Rico Bronya. Did you feel that the other people were rooting for the no-hitter? Yes, a little. That's what she said. See, and that's an IBO right there. Because she's just there for the history. And I it's funny. So I've seen 2 no-hitters in my life in person. I saw Chris Heston, Giants Mets 2016, and obviously Johan Santana. But me and my wife were going to go to Mets Nationals late 2015. It was a doubleheader. It was a split doubleheader in which she was working in the afternoon and I went to the game by myself. And then the second part of the doubleheader was a night game in which they were giving out, was it a towel or a blanket? It was a blanket, I think. It was a blanket. So I say to her, I was like, look, we don't have to go to this game. Now, the Mets are about to go to the playoffs. It's the final weekend of the year. It's completely up to you. And we both kind of agreed, you know what? Let's take the night off. We'll watch a movie, Netflix and chill, as the kids say. But let's get the blanket. So we go, we wait online, or she waits online because I was in the car, gets the blanket. Max Scherzer then goes out and throws a no-hitter that night. And she asked me, like, do you regret not seeing it? And my answer was, I've already seen two. Well, I've only seen one. At that point, the Heston one hadn't happened. But I was content. And that's the way I feel about no-hitters right now, especially when the Mets are on the back end of it. Obviously, if the Mets are pitching a no-hitter, I'll be through the roof. I mean, it would be very exciting to see another one, especially depending on who it is, if it's a one-person no-hitter versus a combined no-hitter. So I'm not saying I wouldn't be excited about a potential no-hitter, but a no-hitter being thrown against my team does not do it for me. Do I respect the other people in the building who probably have never seen a no-hitter saying, hey, I want to be a part of history? To a degree. To a degree. I do to a degree respect it. But I was proud of my son for saying he didn't want to see it, and I didn't want to see it. And I get that a lot of you guys think that that embarrassment would somehow change things for the Mets. It's not changing anything. If David Stearns wants to fire Eric Chavez tomorrow, he's going to do it. It's not going to be because they got no hit by Gavin Williams on a Wednesday afternoon. So I didn't want to see him get no hit. Lindor strikes out, and I am literally thinking, this is going to happen. Holy shit. I can't believe it. And my wife's asking me, what do you want me to do? You want me to film our son, his reaction to it, film the game? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what I want. I want someone to get a hit. And so even though Juan Solo did not have the greatest series and 20 of his 26 home runs are solo, I do appreciate at least the fact that he broke up the no-hitter. And it probably is better that it was broken up with a home run. It's better than getting no hit. That's at least the way I look at it. Do I think it leads to anything? Like, is this going to get Juan Soto hot? I hope so. Is this going to wake the Met offense up? I hope so. Do you remember the game? And I think it was last year. It was definitely last year. The Met Brave game on a Saturday. In which, and they were struggling at the time, where they almost got no hit. I think it was the ninth inning and they broke up the no hitter. They ended up losing the game. They won the next day dramatically, I think, on a Brandon Nimmo walk-off on a Sunday night. And I can't say that led to anything because in my brain, I don't think of that as something that turned their season around. We think more of a little bit later on in the season. But they were being no-hit late into that game. I think that was a combined no-hitter, if memory serves correct. I got to check my scorebook. I don't know if I have my 2024 book up here. In fact, I may. Should I grab it real quick, or is this not interesting enough? It's probably not interesting enough, thinking back to almost being no hit a year ago. But I'm glad they were no hit. All right, I'll say it. I'm glad. But what needs to happen now, and it's not going to be easy, because they're playing like garbage. Yes, they have an off day. Great. They're going to Milwaukee. The Brewers have been the best team in baseball for months now. They got a very tough customer in Brandon Woodruff. They basically have tough customers in every game in this series because the Brewers are pitching really well. They're doing everything really well. They've got Brandon Woodruff on Friday. I wrote this down. Let me pull it up. Logan Henderson, who has only made a handful of starts, but he's pitched well on Saturday. And Quinn Priester, who's had a great year on Sunday. So I can't be confident that this is all of a sudden going to get the bats going, or the bats are going to get going. But it is becoming urgency time because there are two things going on right now. And I'm talking about math and I'm talking about the standings. Number one, while the Phillies did lose on Wednesday, it's 2.5 games now. It's growing. And if you're not careful, that number can explode. 2.5 already feels like an explosion because the Mets and the Phillies have been so tightly together. Gary Cohn had that great stat the other night. I actually thought it was a great stat, saying that the Mets and the Phillies for 50 straight days were within a game of each other, or game and a half of each other, which is nuts. And it's a testament to how back and forth and close this race has been. It's also a testament to how mediocre both teams have been. Phillies haven't played well either. But number one, especially going to Milwaukee, this could become a four-game deficit. And while the Mets have seven games left with Philadelphia, and that will certainly determine a lot, like, It's danger zone. That's number one. Number two, while I'm not scared of Cincinnati and really anybody else in the National League, Miami, I'm talking about the bottom teams that could jump up for a playoff spot. It's getting close for comfort in terms of just making the playoffs. I was watching the score, Cubs-Reds, Wednesday afternoon, and for the first time, I was like, God damn, let's go Cubs. Forget about home field advantage in a wild card round. We got to make sure this team makes the playoffs. Playoffs. So the losing is dangerous because the losing is bringing the division race into danger territory and obviously bringing these other wild card teams closer. So it is a danger zone. All right, let me get to some of your emails. Here are the things I want to get to before we end this Rico episode 526. Number one, we will name a Rico star of the series. I'm the man now, star of the series. I know that's going to piss people off because everyone blows, but we need to honor the award, okay? We'll also pick a net negative, and I want to debate the Jose Ramirez intentional walk from Monday night because I know a lot of people hated it. But let me get to some of your emails. I mentioned David has a new nickname for Juan Soto. It's Juan Solo. Matt writes, very fitting Marte giving them all the love. Yeah, we all got it. It's better than getting no hit. At least he did do that, but you could see they were thrilled with that. They didn't get no hit. They were ecstatic. Lindor's been lost all year long, except for a couple of moments in the beginning of the season. This team is like being aboard the Titanic. You thought you were going somewhere. You thought it was all good. You thought it couldn't sink. This is a collection of losing players, especially the starting pitching. Not saying Peterson isn't good, but he's about the only one who is good. I don't necessarily agree. They're a bunch of losing players, but right now they are losing and it feels like they're going nowhere. Patrick writes, fire Eric Chavez. Evan, the usual response to this is hitting coaches don't matter at the major league level. I do not care. Today's game marks a need for immediate change. Chavez has been here for 4 years, serving as hitting coach for three of them, and the entire time this offense has been streaky at best. There are far too many ice cold streaks for the amount of talent. They look completely flat and lifeless. This rough patch is now a 46-game sample size since they reached 21 games over 500. And strong pitching was the main reason they even got to that mark. Offense has been atrocious all season. I am tired of hearing Mendoza start every post-game presser with got to hand it to blank. He was really good today because the offense is completely dead. Let me save him some time for this weekend. I got to hand it to Brandon Woodruff. I got to hand it to Logan Henderson. And I got to hand it to whoever the hell pitches for the Brewers on Sunday. They were really good. Hats off to them. Eric Chavez needs to go. Even if hitting coaches are insignificant at the MLB level, consider it symbolic. This complete offensive ineptitude can no longer stand without consequences. I'm not fighting with you. I'm not fighting with him. Because I was talking the other day, and the Yankees did win a game now, so maybe Yankee fans are happy. But before they won the finale of their series against Texas, and I was being honest saying, I'd fire Aaron Boone. Not because I'm being irrational, not because I like firing people, but because I would try something to spark the team, and he's been there for a long time. Obviously, I wouldn't do that with Mendy, but I get that with Eric Chavez. I'm not going to argue that. How can I argue firing Eric Chavez? This offense has underperformed for 116 games. What are you going to do about it? We saw the lineup change. We saw him go back to the original lineup of Lindor, Soto, Alonso, which I admit I prefer. What'd that do on Wednesday? You talk about player meetings. Mendy says, we meet every day. So the firing Chavez plan, like, I'm not arguing. How can I argue with that right now? Alex writes, Evan, the series has finally converted me into believing that April and May were the aberration and not the standard. Every team has bad stretches, but real contenders don't do this multiple times in a season, losing 11 of 13, 8 of 9, etc. I think back to Tommy Pham's comments in 2023 about the lack of hard work. Was he right? Did the 2024 run do enough to disprove those comments? Or is this iteration of the core just a bit rotten? 2021 and 2023 were major disappointments. 2022 is an epic fizzle. Would love to hear your thoughts. I don't think back to Tommy Pham's comments. The team is a little bit different. I don't know who Tommy was specifically referring to when he talked about how lazy they were. The only thing he made clear was he wasn't talking about Francisco Lindor and Pete Alonso. Well, if that's the case, who's he talking about? Because the core of this team, which has changed now with the addition of Juan Soto, are those two guys, Juan Soto, who everyone admits is one of the hardest working guys in baseball, and Brandon Nimmo, who I don't think anybody thinks is lazy or not working hard.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
Out here, we feel things. The sore calves that lead to epic views, the cool waterfall mist during a hot hike, and the breeze that hits just right at the summit. But hey, don't just listen to us. Experience it for yourself. All Trails makes it easy to discover the best of the outdoors. With more than 450,000 trails around the world, points of interest along the trail, and offline maps for always-on navigation. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Whether it's a date night, a special event, or just another Tuesday, our over 800 stylists are here to help you look and feel your best. We're about personalized style that fits your life. Made for real-life moments. Maurice's.
Scott Stern writes, the only choice for the Rico I'm the Man Now award is Ryan Stanek, since he's the only man on the 26-man roster who didn't touch the field this series. That's a good one. No one who participated in this series, which brought shame to the organization and fan base, should be bestowed this honor. I don't care what he did on the field. Honorable mention to Dom Hamill. He was only here for 2 days, so he's out of luck. Well, Scott, I understand the sentiment, and I do understand that every time the Mets get swept or sweep, people don't like the consistency of handing out an award for negativity when they're winning or positivity when they're losing. But I apologize. I need to plow through this. I believe it is very important, even in sweeps, to name a Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series. And I will take 30 seconds to do so. Not going to waste too much time of our pod doing it. But I do believe someone needs that honor. You say Ryan Stanek because he didn't pitch. I think right now there are basically there's like no option. There are three options. You can give it to Clay Holmes. Five solid innings, did his job. I got no problem with that. You can give it to Reed Garrett, who pitched two scoreless innings in two of the games he came into. I would have said Ryan Helsley because I thought he did his job, but unfortunately, he was on the mound getting a loss, giving up a sacrifice fly. So it can't be Ryan Helsley. And I guess it could be Brooks Raley, who pitched in two games. I can't honor your request of giving it to somebody who did not participate in the series. So I'm going to decide that it's Reed Garrett. I'm sorry. I know it is literally the weakest Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series we've ever handed out. I admit that. Maybe Brandon Waddell's award in the Pittsburgh series. That may have been the worst one. But came into two games, got the job done, two scoreless innings. I'm giving it to Reed Garrett. That's just me. I was thinking about Clay Holmes because I did think Clay Holmes pitched well. But five innings, yeah, I know that's what he is. I'm considering it. Can't give it to him because there's nobody on offense that you should give this to. Here are the offensive performances from this three-game series. Francisco Lindor went a combined 2-for-12. And remember, he went 2-for-5 in game one. So all of his production came in game one. Juan Soto, on the other hand, went 3-for-10 with a home run and scored two runs. Not the worst numbers in the world, but not really impactful. He was impactful a little bit in game one during the rally. Obviously, the base hit against Hunter Gattis. So it's not like he was a complete nothing. You want to give him credit for the solo home run that broke up a no-hitter? I guess you can give him some honorable mention. Pete Alonso went 4-for-5 in the first game. So I would have made Alonso a candidate for the I'm the Man Now star of the series, but the rest of the series was such a no-show, I can't do it. And bases loaded, one out, with a chance to win game one. I know it's tough to kill him because he went 4-for-4, but I, in good conscience, couldn't give the award to anybody on offense. I think there are two candidates, though, in terms of handing out the net negative. I think it's Brandon Nimmo, who went 0-for-10 with 7 strikeouts. 7! He did have a couple of walks on Wednesday, a couple of good at-bats. And then you got Mark Vientos, who actually played all 3 games and went 1-for-12. He did drive in the game tying run. So to me, the net negative is Brandon Nimmo. I mean, I'm sorry. Yeah, 0-for-10 with 7 strikeouts? So those were our awards. Reed Garrett is the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series, and Brandon Nimmo is the net negative. Let me give you some good news. You know you can celebrate your highlights, whether it's watching your baseball team or just your personal highlights, like you're having a good time on a Friday night. You can celebrate those highlights with Mio Sparkling Sake, a true crowd pleaser. Light, bubbly, easy to enjoy. Whether you're at Citi Field, hold on, I got some right here. Holding it up. Whether you're at Citi Field or your favorite spot, ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name, a new tradition served chilled, imported from Japan, the official sake of Rico Bronya. Enjoy responsibly. So those are the awards. I think we got that over with. That was very, very painful, but it's done. All right, let's get to Dan. Dan's got a lot to say. It's happening again, and there's nobody in this room to stop it. I felt it listening to Nimmo in the postgame on Tuesday, and it literally sent shivers down my spine. Less than 50 games left, season slipping away right in front of their faces, and they just sit there and talk about, quote, we know we're good. There's so much talent in this room, it's going to click. We're going to get through it. It happened in 21 when they pissed away a division they led all year in August and then spiraled out of a playoff spot. It happened in 22 when they wouldn't acknowledge the Braves coming warp speed at them and handed over the NL East, then rolled over in 3 games at home in a wild card round. It happened in 23 when they were so in denial anything was wrong that all of a sudden they had to turn into sellers because they couldn't straighten themselves out. There has been one time since this group got together 5 seasons ago that they haven't succumbed to it. And that was last year when J.D. Martinez came in and took control of the room. Lindor ain't that guy. Nimmo ain't that guy. And Alonso for sure isn't, because he'll just tell us to just smile and know we've got this, like he did in 2021 when they're torpedoing their first season together into the sewer. They've all let this happen over and over again, and it's basically the reason I started writing into the Rico in the first place, because I felt insane listening to them talk like this when we're seeing what's really happening with our own eyes. It doesn't matter if it's Rojas, Buck, or Mendy in that clubhouse. If this group is together, there isn't a soul among them that has the sack to stop this crap from happening, and that's just a fact, period. Stop. A lot of strong words there from Dan, and right now it's very tough to argue with a lot of it. We know what happened in 21. We know what happened in 22. We know what happened in 23. Last year, in a lot of ways, was the aberration. And one thing we talked about during the offseason, and I certainly brought up to Carlos Mendoza in spring training and before the season, and I didn't say it like defiantly, this is going to F up the Mets, because I didn't necessarily believe it, but there was that, hey, how much does it hurt not having J.D. Martinez in that locker room? And to a degree, Jose Iglesias. Jose gets all the attention because of the music and because his numbers were good. J.D. was not that productive for a bulk of the season, but he was a leader in that room. And that's something that's very difficult to define. Like, we sit here and we watch this team and we can see what's happening on the field. We don't know about what happens behind the scenes. And it is fair to wonder, especially if this continues, is that what they're missing? That somehow words from a veteran who's been around like J.D. Martinez can somehow help or relax a team or get them going? So it's absolutely a fair question. It's concerning, especially the longer this goes, because this is a team that has not played consistently good baseball for months. And I brought this up on the air the other day, and it's so true. I remember last year, a lot of us were very skeptical in believing they were good. You know, I remember in August, Drunk Rico. we all know this team sucks. We all know this team isn't making the playoffs. So even I, as a relatively positive fan, I don't know, maybe I'm not. I guess that's up to the listener to discern. Am I negative? Am I positive? Maybe it depends on the day of the week. I don't know. But it took a while to believe in last year's team. And one of the arguments why we should was, hey, since June 1st, they're the best team in baseball. And when 2 months go by and you're clearly better than the Phillies and just as good as the Dodgers, you have to start to believe, well, maybe they're that good. And it turned out to be the case, right? They made the playoffs. They answered the call when they needed to, backs against the wall, and they got to the NLCS. Well, this is a team that since really late April is a 500 team. And a team that since mid-June, which is almost 2 months, is a below 500 team. So what do you make of it? Is that who they are? And it is very tough to not start to think that that's who they are and that this is just not that good of a team. Now, here's the good news, because that's really depressing. And I think a lot of it true. The good news is if you can just make the effing playoffs, which shouldn't be that tough, you get a brand new season where crazy bleep happens. And so even when you're flawed and you're mediocre, get hot at the right time. Is any of us confident they're going to get hot at the right time? No. But nevertheless, that's, I guess, the beauty of the modern baseball. Jimmy writes, is Carlos Mendoza a good manager? No. Quick answer is, of course. First-year manager took his team to the NLCS in an evaluation year. Or did he merely make a lineup change? Lindor played like an MVP, and after Beatty's failure, he was left with Mark Vientos, who surged into an elite offensive player. And add to Manaea and Severino's improvements, we assume came from the pitching lab, I begin to think. Let's take a closer look. This year, Lindor started off hot, along with Pete and the shiny new addition of Juan Soto. The Mets were the best team in baseball, and let's not forget the pitching lab turned out Canning and Holmes. Even McGill was good for the first 6 weeks. So is this Mendoza, or are those the players, Stearns and Cohen's improvements to this training facilities? I know the old adage, managers play a part in about 10 to 15 wins and losses a year, but what has Mendoza tried during the skids his team has hit during his tenure? Lineup changes. Over and over again, lineup changes. Who's in the lineup today? No one knows who's hitting in that slot. Who knows who's playing what position? We'll figure it out tomorrow. Put names in a hat, but wait, here comes the stat heads with the splits. Nah, forget them. Let's wait for the hamburger to throw out the first pitch, or if Helsley or Mullins writes a catchy song, we can play after every home run. Does he have any other tricks, any other ideas? He doesn't play the splits. He just thinks you're better qualified to hit the pitcher that wipes his ass with the opposite hand you do. Very funny, Jimmy. Nothing is more glaring than today's lineup. Beatty is an awful slump, made a mental and physical error by not getting the sure out at first and throwing wide to second in the 10th inning earlier in the series. In the last seven games, he's hitting 118. Meanwhile, Roddy Mauricio, 273 with a 636 slugging percentage. Who's in the lineup today? Beatty. And I don't want to hear about Peterson's on the mound, and he gets a lot of ground balls. Vientos played third base the last game. Peterson was on the mound. Mauricio is just as good as Beatty in the field, and I'll take Mauricio's bat over Beatty's any day. There's a few other things there from Jimmy, but let me address a few of these. Number one, I agree with your lineup critique. I look at this three-game series, and I say, okay, what am I pissed at Mendoza for? And honestly, there really isn't a lot. Like, I look at Wednesday's game, and the one thing I'd agree with you on is I would have played Mauricio over Beatty. Beatty is in a major slump right now. I do think his defense overall has been good this year, despite the error on Monday. But I want to see Ronnie Mauricio. Ronnie Mauricio didn't play game two of this series. He played game one of the series, only had two at-bats till he got pinch hit for by Starling Marte. So we barely seen him in this series. So I agree with that critique. But I think back to the rest of this series, and there isn't a lot like I'm mad at. There's not a lot where I say, boy, the manager screwed this up. So I know throughout this year, there are plenty of things I bitch about, plenty of decisions I complain about, pinch hitting decisions like the San Francisco series when he pinch hit for Vientos with Beatty, which I hated. But in this particular series, I don't see it. And I think that a lot of times it's just about performance. It's just about the players. Now, what is he doing behind the scenes? That's the stuff we don't know. You talk about the lineup changes. Don't we all call for lineup changes when the offense isn't hitting? And I don't think he particularly changes the lineup as much as other managers. Like when he took Lindor out of the leadoff spot, that was sort of consistent for a few weeks or a few months now, whenever that decision was made. Now he's gone back to it, but it wasn't like he was flipping it all the time. So as I sit here right now, angry at this team, I just can't put it on Mendy. Now, he's the manager of the team. Sure, the buck stops with him. Fine. I guess we could do that thing. But these guys have to perform. This offense couldn't score a goddamn run from the third inning of game two through the end of the series. Couldn't score a run. Is that on the manager? Matthew writes, Evan, state of the Mets. 13 and a third straight innings without a hit during the heart of a pennant race. If that doesn't get a hitting coach fired, I don't know what else can. Chavez and Barnes have to go or will be quickly leapfrogged by the Marlins. I heard Mendoza say on The Fan that their philosophy is basically to hit the ball hard and cross your fingers. How is that an acceptable approach at the plate team-wide? Okay. What Mendy said was, in explaining some of their issues, some of it's bad luck. And some of it is bad luck. Some of it. The Lindor double play from Tuesday night, yes, it was bad luck. But what about the rest of the game? So Mendy isn't wrong when he says that. The problem is that isn't the main issue. You know what I mean? Yeah. Anyhow, a lot more emails saying Eric Chavez should be fired. Jeremy Barnes should be fired. Here's a Juan Soto email. Juan Soto doesn't have a big hit all year, but he's able to go yard to ruin the no-hitter. This offense is a huge problem, and I don't really have a solution. I don't expect anything to change, but we have to hope something clicks in the offseason. If they don't, we have to acknowledge missing the playoffs is a real possibility. Just three games ahead of the Reds coming into the day with the Reds having a 2-1 series season advantage. The bullpen looks good, Peterson looks good, and I have faith in Manaea and Senga, but the offense will be our downfall, hopefully in October, but probably in an epic collapse where the Mets miss the playoffs. I'll tell you, Mets missing the playoffs would be an epic collapse. I agree. All right, let me get to the Jose Ramirez thing, a little baseball in the weeds discussion. I want to go back to the opener of this series because I was doing a drive home podcast, driving home after the Mets lost that brutal 7-6 game, game one of this series. They're down 5-0. They come back dramatically. And then, unfortunately, Brett Beatty makes a big miscue. Right before Beatty made the miscue, let me reset the situation. Top of the 10th inning, tie game, obviously. Runner is on second. That is the ghost runner. The runner on second is Daniel Schneeman, and Jose Ramirez is up. After Ramirez is David Fry, who's hitting 172. Much better hitter than that. Missed a big part of the season early. Had an RBI hit early in the game, but David Fry. Then it's Carlos Santana, who's typical Carlos Santana year, low batting average, decent on base, little bit of pop, but nothing that scares you. And then, yes, you have Gabriel Arias, who hasn't had the greatest year in the world, but did hit a three-run home run earlier in the game. There is a runner on second and nobody out, ghost runner. There is no way you can face Jose Ramirez. And when Mendy walked him to start the 10th inning, to me, it was a no-brainer. I was even saying it to my son while we were at the game. I was like, yeah, it's going to be first and second, nobody out. He said, why? I said, well, the first hitter for Cleveland is their best hitter, Jose Ramirez. They'd be crazy to face him. In fact, earlier in the game, with a runner on second and one out in the seventh inning, at this time it's 5-3 Cleveland, they did face Ramirez, and I hated it. I didn't like it. And Tyler Rogers was on the mound, so I assume that, well, maybe Tyler Rogers has good career numbers against Ramirez. Maybe Ramirez doesn't see him well. But I didn't like it because when there is a great player, and he is a great player, I think we all can acknowledge that. Not in October, but he's a great player in the regular season. Look that up. You can't let him beat you. So anybody still bitching or bitching about the decision to walk Ramirez with a runner on second, nobody out in the 10th inning, I'm sorry, that is Monday morning quarterbacking. I had a caller call up to fight me on this, and he said, but Ev, you can't go down by two, and you're giving them another base runner. Why create the possibility that more runs can score? Sure, that's the negative of putting a guy on base with nobody out. But what about the fact that the guy's driven in 60 runs this year and he's a Hall of Famer and he could park one or hit one up the alley? Now, what ended up happening in this series is that the New York Mets did a great job against Jose Ramirez. They really did. And I give him a lot of credit. 1-for-8, 1-for-12. Fantastic. I didn't think that in the 10th inning of game one. And then right after, okay, David Fry is going to bunt. Even if he gets the bunt down, second and third, one out, Now I'm in a spot where maybe I walk Carlos Santana. I got the bases loaded. I got a force out at any base. And yeah, Gabriel Arias hit a home run earlier, but he ain't Jose Ramirez. I can't let best players beat me. Remember 2 years ago with Vladimir Guerrero and the Mets didn't walk him with an open base? We almost lost our minds. So I've been harsh by saying I don't see the other side. Okay, maybe I can try to see the other side. I want to be open-minded. I don't want to be like, well, you know, our typical politicians, you're just wrong and an idiot. I just strongly agree with the fact that you got to take the bat out of Ramirez's hands. And the Mets screwed up. I mean, Brett Beatty made a miscue. And Lindor should have made that play. That was one of those half an errors on each. It's not a good throw by Beatty. But if you're Francisco Lindor, make that play. Got to make that play. All right, three games against the Brewers. I don't know how anybody could be confident about this. I mentioned earlier the pitching matchups on the Brewers side. On the Mets side, Kodai Senga, who they need to have a good start. Now, the Mets are going to have a really fresh bullpen because they have an off day before the series and an off day after the series before they come home for a six-game homestand against the Braves and the Mariners. But they're going Senga Woodruff in the opener. It sounds like an opener for Frankie Montas, which is the first sign that they don't trust him. That's what it tells you. It also is, I think, a little bit of a product of them having those off days where they can kind of take advantage of their bullpen being a strength. But let's see what happens on Friday. Let's see if Senga can actually get through six solid innings. But Montas on Saturday and Manaea on Sunday, I'm not worried yet about Kodai and Sean Manaea. But unfortunately, the way this offense is hitting, and even looking at the tough pitching they're about to face, they almost need perfection out of their starters. And it's not fair. But that's the spot they're in. And the Mets created a cushion by their great start, right? The reason why you can still sit here and cite their record and say they're in good shape is because they got off to a really good start. They got off to a really good start because of their pitching. And now, with their pitching having some issues, the offense is worse than ever. So it is so on this offense to wake the F up. And where's my confidence? It ain't high. It's not high against Milwaukee. It's not coming home to face Atlanta. It's not the Seattle series. I mean, right now, you want to call this Panic City? Fine by me, because I'm panicking. The good news is it's August 6th or August 7th. And the other good news is currently they're three games up on a playoff spot. And you look at the bottom of the National League and you say, okay, because if we are getting into that dirty territory of just make the playoffs, that's all that matters. Because right now they are behind San Diego too. They're a game or a half game behind the Padres, and the Padres have the tiebreaker as well. So third wild card spot could be in their horizon. And really that's where they're locked into at this moment. Season ends today, Mets Phillies in the postseason, best of three in Philadelphia. But the teams behind the Mets and behind San Diego and Chicago knocking on the door, number one, the Reds, who are 60-55. Then you've got the Giants, who, remember, sold off their bullpen. Then you've got St. Louis at a game under 500. And then you've got Miami. Since he's three back, the Giants are five back. The Cardinals are six back. The Marlins are 6.5 back. So I hope I don't regret this. I'm not necessarily worried about who's coming, but you want to get some wins and straighten this thing out. So hopefully this was therapeutic. Hopefully we are feeling a little bit better as Met fans, but the reality is this offense has sucked. This team just completed a disastrous homestand by going 1-5, and we are all residing once again in Panic City. Episode 527 of the Rico Brogna will probably be posted sometime Thursday after Eric Chavez gets fired. Which is you know what? May happen. So get ready for that instant reaction when it occurs. But we appreciate you listening and downloading. You can subscribe to the Rico Brogna wherever you download your podcast. We always have Rico's after series end, and we pop in the instant reactions when we deem fit. Thank you very much for listening to another edition, a depressing edition, a sad edition of Rico Brogna.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Brogna podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Quality sleep isn't just about how long, but how well you sleep. And science proves temperature plays a massive role. ChiliPad by SleepMe is a precision temperature-controlled sleep system that cools or warms your bed so you can sleep hard and recover harder. And it's not just for pro athletes. Just set your temp from 55 to 115 degrees, and ChiliPad does the rest. Visit sleep.me and use code SLEEPCOOL20 for 20% off your first ChiliPad. That's SLEEP.ME for 20% off your ChiliPad. This special offer expires September 30th and cannot be combined with other offers.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.